So we've talked a lot about maternity leave, and obviously women should get all the leave. But what about the dads? Let me explain.
Let me explain with Sean Defoe, a News Talk original.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Let Me Explain podcast and this edition of our mini-series Dadhood, where we are talking all things being a dad, and we are talking about paternity today because you get 2 weeks. That's the sort of state statutory. Some employers are better than others. Some will give you more. And 2 weeks from everybody I've spoke to is basically a blink in the eye that it has gone by before you know it, and suddenly the baby has graduated and you haven't had any other time off. So to talk with someone who I don't think had any actual entitlement to paternity leave the second time around, and who is in a position to maybe also change the rules. Kieran Ahern, Labour Party TD, we are in your lovely office here in the Dáil. Thanks for chatting to us.
Thanks for coming in to me, Sean. This is a great opportunity to talk about something important.
Yeah, so it brings to your own scenario. You've obviously got two little ones, one more recent than the other.
Yeah, we've two boys. One is nearly four and one is 9 months. And I had our first child when I was working as a solicitor in private practice. And I was very lucky that, you know, as you mentioned, the statutory entitlement is 2 weeks of paternity leave. My employer at the time gave me a month off and topped up my salary, very importantly, to my full salary for that month, which was above and beyond what is required by law. The rate that's currently paid is €299 per week, which for a lot of people would be a fairly significant pay cut. So it, you know, one of the really most important things with paternity leave is making it affordable for people. And certainly in the private sector, that is an issue. I can talk about my second child in a minute because he was born when I was a TD, and TDs are creatures of the constitution. We are not employees. We are a very strange breed in many ways. And we have all of the employment rights and none of the employment rights at the same time. We're creatures of the Constitution, which means whether or not, broadly speaking, we turn up for work and or do any work over the 5-year term that you're elected for, you get paid regardless, unless you resign your seat. There are nuances there about expenses and things like that, travel expenses.
I mean, a certain amount of age expenses. And of course, if you didn't turn up any day, you could be summarily kicked out of your
job. Oh, absolutely. Yes.
The next election. Yeah. But
as you would expect to be. But on a day-to-day basis, you don't have the leave entitlements and the same type of thing. So my experience the second time around was starting off from that base where I said, look, in the private sector, if I was getting a month off, I should be taking that for our second child when I'm a TD regardless. But there was no, I suppose, internally here, there were no processes for that. I wrote to the Cam Corla about it, and she sort of said, well, there was a forum on flexible working for people in Leinster House. But one of the things they found is that if they want to do anything around leave, or in particular flexible working, which we might talk about later, because it's very much related, that they would need to change the constitution, particularly when it comes to things like voting, that you are supposed to be present and voting in the Dáil according to the constitution, and that line would need to be changed.
This caused quite a bit of controversy during COVID, didn't it? Because there was the chance of working from home when we all got the Zoom and Teams and whatever, and would maternity leave, it should be said as well, with the likes of Holly Kearns and Helen McEntee just came up, in that essentially you don't have any right to it. You can't vote remotely, so you can't just work from home or from it in, even if you were doing some constituency stuff, which you shouldn't be, ideally, whether you're on paternity or maternity leave. And so it is kind of a complicated one. So what did you end up doing in paid leave?
Just not turning up for a month. I mean, in short, obviously, I cleared it with my party, and, you know, Ivana Batchelor was really supportive of that, of course. And my colleagues, you know, I'm the spokesperson for climate, for transport. So when there were topics like that coming up in the Dáil, or there were ministerial questions, one of my colleagues stepped in and spoke in my place, which was great. On a constituency level, you know, every TD has two members of staff, so my office remained open. We were still, the emails never stopped. So Dara and Jen, who were working with me, they kept going. And obviously I'd be in touch with them a few times a day, a few times a week, depending on what it is, just on the phone to deal with it, to give them a steer on particular things. But, you know, for the most part, I stepped away, the office kept running, and people in the party were able to step up. My colleagues were able to step up and cover me for speaking. But again, I was just marked as absent from the Dáil. And I wasn't absent for no reason. I was obviously at home doing really vital work, quite mundane work, but very important work, which is doing the nappies, doing the shopping, trying to make sure that you know my wife Maeve, who, you know, given birth, was comfortable, was able, you know, just was able to cope at home. And it's great.
He's supportive. Dads, as much as a supportive TD for your constituents, like, yeah. it's a different job from a lot of people. Did you feel that element of pressure more the second time around, that all, because now you're a public rep and people have voted for you and there's expectations, that you maybe didn't relax as much, and not that you can relax when you have a newborn, but you know what I mean, relax into the break as much as you did, say, the first time around?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it's particular to, though, just sort of taking paternity leave. It's almost like any time you step away from being a TD, I find it hard to step away. In separate, I mean, that's a separate issue, and that's something I need to just get my head around in another way, because the job is never done, obviously. There's always, and so things are always urgent for people. You know, if someone is in need of emergency accommodation and they want their TD to try and look at it, they need you to do it. Now, again, having great staff really helps with that, because, you know, while the queries come into me, I obviously don't do the legwork on absolutely every query. Sometimes you need to make a call or get a contact for someone. But obviously you have staff who do a lot of that work for you. So some of that is trusting your staff and making sure you have good people in place, which I do. I'm very lucky. But you do, yeah, there's an element of, and I'm sure it goes for every job. I mean, I felt it in my other job as well, as a solicitor. There were cases that I was working on that I was kind of stepping away from or handing over to colleagues, and you do feel that guilt. But it's about trust, and it's about knowing that, like, the world keeps turning in your absence. We're all only individuals, yeah, doing our small bit, and no one is irreplaceable. So you just have to be comfortable with that.
Yeah, embrace your own mortality in a sense.
Yeah, and to be fair, people understand that this is the way things are now. But you know, like, it can't be the way that the man is just going to continue doing his job, and every child rearing responsibility is put onto to your partner. That's just not the way the world works anymore, nor is it the way it should work. So you kind of have to take a lead as well in these kind of things, and that's why I wanted to speak out about it at the time and say I am doing this. I am, you know, purposefully walking away for a month to be with my family to do this really important role, and I think more people should be doing that. More men should be doing that.
So there's two questions that arise about them. I start with TDs, and there's been others who have taken this and sort of quiet leave, and Simon Harris has done it in the past. You've had John Cummins recently as well, the junior minister. Is there any progress, or has there been any progress, towards making an entitlement? And if it has to go to a referendum, do you think that referendum would pass, or would it even ever get tabled for the risk of the usual backlash against the government that sees referendums defeated all the time?
There is that risk. And I wouldn't be necessarily proposing that this change the constitution on its own in relation to TDs being able to work flexibly would go through or would be proposed. I mean, our constitution is in need of a fair bit of updating. There have been loads of constitutional conventions. There have been at one point there was talk of a constitution day with a series of proposals to update and amend the constitution. If we were doing a bit of a rewrite, this is something that should change pretty immediately. And it's the norm in county councils around the country that you can attend meetings remotely, you can vote remotely. You know, other parliaments around the world do it as well, including in the UK. In fact, in the UK as well, I think it was Stella Creasy. She had an interim MP appointed for 6 months when she took maternity leave, which was really interesting. A locum, I think, was how they described it, a locum MP. So someone who just came in and did her job for her. And this is in addition to the staff that she would have had. This was someone who was maybe could have been a councillor or someone, but anyway, someone stepped up and was appointed to do the job of MP for 6 months, which, you know, that's possibly the level you need to be at to be able to sort of say, okay, I'm comfortable stepping away. And because you do, your phone is always on, or, you know, it's hard at all times to ignore the...
But it makes a lot of sense. I mean, if you leave on maternity leave for another job, they're going to get a temporary contract and a maternity contract in. Why wouldn't it be the same for someone like Ellen McEntee, who instead had ministers sort of picking up, and there is a wider conversation maybe about how well that worked or didn't work. For people who aren't TDs, 2 weeks, and I have to say, news are very good to me. I'm going to take a little more than a month through different leaves and paternity leave and all the rest of it. But for a lot of people, if they're not getting topped up, 2 weeks are very hard to take. And for a lot of people who are getting topped up, 2 weeks seems like just a very, very paltry amount.
Yeah, it's nothing. Your head is spinning for those 2 weeks as well, and certainly when the first child comes around. Look, that's something that in the Labour Party we've obviously been pushing for additional leave, and there has been good. You have to, you know, give the recent governments credit for this. Over the, you know, certainly in the teens, up to prior to COVID, there was a lot of work done in terms of enhancing rights for parental leave, parents leave, which is another kind of paid state benefit. We'd like to see it going further. I think the key thing is the finances and making that work. We've got maternity benefit is paid, but it's paid at a state rate, which is less than, again, what most people would be earning, or a lot of people would be earning in work. So you already maybe in the household have one parent who is taking a pay cut, to then have a second parent who is taking a similar, you know, drastic pay cut, for even if it's for 2 weeks, or if you want people to be doing more paternity leave, that's, the financials can be an issue unless your employer tops it up. And obviously that's not obligatory. So in other countries, in Nordic countries, you know, they do pay 80 to 100% of your salary if you're taking paternity leave or parents leave. So that's where you got to be aiming towards. That's got to be what we've been looking for. And we've done it. We do that with some social welfare benefits now, unemployment benefits, you know, that it is tracked to your exit salary, the salary that you were earning prior to being made unemployed. So I would say the same logic applies to trying to get to encourage people to use paternity leave.
Yeah. How many weeks do you think you were in, particularly on the first child, before you, I don't want to say got the hang of it, as a years long process, but did you find after a month you were sort of like, oh, sorry, I have to do what now? I have to work as well as keep this little bundle alive?
Yeah. I mean, the sleep thing is the big issue. When you have time off, you don't really care, because like you can stay up till 5 a.m. or we were doing shifts. It's getting into a routine and a rhythm for going back to work. I don't, like, you never figure it out. You never figure it out. I'm very look like
you're assuring me.
You're totally making it up as you go along. And my wife has a brilliant career as well, much more impressive actually than my own. And we're trying to juggle our competing work demands with our home life. That's always challenging. But like, I've got a great friends group. We have a WhatsApp group with guys I was in school with where we share our experiences. It's called the DILFs group, very ironically. we share our terrible nights. We're like, is your kid sick this week? My kid's got this. It acts as a bit of a marketplace. Like, we're getting rid of this high chair. Do you want it? You know, it's actually great. We share the good times and the bad times and the difficult times. And finding those communities is really important as well. So that's actually genuinely been a good help and a source of comfort or advice when you're kind of struggling at home.
Yeah.
But everyone struggles with it, but it's brilliant. I certainly wouldn't change it for the world. But you have to remind yourself of that at 4 a.m. sometimes.
Exactly. But you're up for your third time that night.
Yeah.
It's kind of mad, and I'm sort of struck by it whenever I come into Leinster House these days. That difference of generation that you sort of suggested at earlier, whereby whoever was inhabiting this office 40, 50 years ago wouldn't have expected to take any of this. It was the woman's job to do all the rearing. And now you see men much more involved. And it's just kind of an interesting thing that I wonder how it will affect the generation that comes. You would hope it would be a positive thing, but that men are much more involved. Perhaps it addresses some of the issues that we are seeing now with young teens and boys. I don't know, but it's just sort of an interesting shift that if you had said any of this in this same room 50 years ago, they would have been like, what are you talking about? You've got to vote, and then we need to see you in the bar, or let the wife take care of that.
Yeah, I just, that won't fly in my house, you know. I'd be out the door. So it's just something that we have to figure out. And it's right, if you want kind of more diversity in politics from an age perspective, because I do sometimes query, you know, oh, am I doing this at the right time in my life? Should I not have waited till the kids were a bit older? Obviously, I'm delighted to do it. It's a massive privilege to be here. But I sometimes see some of my colleagues, I'm like, oh, you guys have just got so much more free time than I do. But there's different phases in life, and you know, as people get older, you have different caring responsibilities. You've got caring responsibilities for older parents as well, as lots of my colleagues do, and that you know, from going back just to the flexible working for politicians, like, we're tied here a lot of the time, unnecessarily. And that not only affects young parents, it affects everybody for whatever stage they are in their lives. And a lot of it is unnecessary. Waiting around till 11 p.m. on campus for votes on a Wednesday night is just totally unnecessary. Where you could be doing that. You could be pressing a button from home, or, you know, remotely, or getting proxy voting as they do in other jurisdictions, as in having someone else vote in your place, knowing what you were going to vote. We do have some informal pairing arrangements, but not always possible to arrange those at the last minute when a caring need might arise. So, you know, and they do depend on politics as well. And as you know, certainly in the last year, there have been frictions between opposition and government in terms of dole arrangements and speaking times, speaking rights and things like that. So pairing wasn't, we weren't offering pairing as an opposition for a lot of the certainly the last year, and it's changing slightly. But again, so these, to have some more formal structures would be very important. But it's a slow burn. It's a slow burn. Even getting access to the Dáil Creche, I'm on a waiting list for the Dáil Creche. I'm trying to do something about that. I understand other politicians are as well. I don't know. Other than it's open. It's open to former politicians, current politicians, and then staff as well. Oireachtas staff, and there's over thousands
on the campus,
yeah,
isn't there?
Yeah, it's huge. So and that's obviously only right. But that's something I'm pushing for at the moment, is to try and get them to expand, just hire another couple of staff for the Dáil Creche. And I mean, Ivana Batchik told me this is something she was struggling with, you know, 18, 20 years ago when she was having her kids, that you always have to push a little bit to get these things. But, you know, that kind of on-site creche is vital to people doing, again, to a modern workplace and modern ways of working, and encouraging more diversity in your workforce. Yeah. So that's something I'm working on at the moment.
Finally then, and you kind of touched on the work-life balance, and a lot of people wonder about that. What's the right way to hit it? We've seen TDs leaving this chamber and this house much younger than they would have, and starting new careers and sort of saying, oh yeah, I want to spend more time with my family, or I regret not spending more time with your kids. With two under four, how do you think about that, or how do you go about managing that? And being at the start, really, of potentially of your Dáil career, being a first-time TD, is it something you worry about? How do you try and manage that work-life aspect when your work-life is more all-consuming than someone who could leave it at the door at 5 o'clock?
Yeah. I mean, it is definitely something I worry about, and I don't know how some other politicians do it, genuinely. And I have it easy. I live in Dublin. My commute is kind of a 25-minute cycle, so I can usually drop one of our children to school or to creche in the morning, and often I can pick them up, or I at least get home every night to Dublin. You know, there are TDs who are up here 3 nights a week, which is, again, really, really difficult. I don't know, again, like Holly Curran's coming up from West Cork. Really, really, really difficult. Look, it's just, I think no matter what career you're in, your struggle between trying to balance your home life and your work life is always going to be there. I mean, how will I manage it? I don't know. But you find ways. You know, we're looking at au pairs. We're looking at we've got grandparents on both sides, thankfully, who are very helpful. Who are all busy now as well. You know, I mean, my granny minded me 5 days a week, but, you know, my mum's too busy for that. And that's fair enough. And like, so are Maeve's parents. We all have things going on. You have to expect that. So, I mean, working on getting better childcare, and state provided childcare. And obviously that's something that we as a party want to see. Early years education being treated more like primary education, where, you know, teachers or creche staff are employed directly by the state, where you have a mix of private and public. And it does, the government are making some noises about that just today, I believe, that maybe a pilot scheme is going to be started. So we'd really welcome that. But finding creche places is really difficult as well. What does the future hold? Who knows? But you just figure these things out. You find time, you manage, you cope. That's what parenting is all about. And even going from one to two kids, like, whenever I'm just left with one kid, I'm like, oh my God, I've got all the time in the world to do things now. This is the easiest thing in the world. You know, you adapt and you find life finds a way, as they say.
Yeah, there you go. Didn't think we'd end this on a Jurassic Park foot, but there you are.
We were doing some Jurassic Park Lego at the weekend. So, you know, it's in the head.
I see you've got a yellow or a Lego yellow submarine on the desk. So it's not just the kids who are playing with the Lego.
No, I mean, that is one of the benefits of parenting, that you get to go back to all the stuff that you loved as a kid and that I never really grew up. So, you know, we watched Home Alone this Christmas with Fionn for the first time, and that was fantastic. It was maybe not suitable for him entirely, but you're like, oh, no, this is, you never do that. You know, you never throw a paint can down the stairs at us, right? You know that. You know that.
Yeah, you look at the 90s movies now and we go, how are we allowed to watch some of this content?
Yeah.
Maybe it explains an awful lot about us, but like you, dude, adult Lego is very relaxing.
It is. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You get the time between parenting. Ciarán Hearn, thank you so much for joining us on Let Me Explain podcast. Really appreciate it. And let's hope some of your calls maybe end up in bills and maybe end up in new changes to the law and the rights that both parents and mothers have. That's it for this episode of Let Me Explain in the Dadhood series that we're doing. And I'll be back with you next week with another episode.